This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Barbecue in North Carolina, it's like religion. And like many religions, Carolina Q is made up of factions and denominations. Distinctions like Piedmont or Eastern style, whole hog or shoulder. These subtle differences that may seem trivial to the outsider can lead to fisticuffs for a true Tar Heel. Documenting all that North Carolina has to offer on the subject is no easy task, but my next two guests took the challenge head on. John Shelton Reed and Dale Volberg Reed are husband and wife and co-authors of the book Holy Smoke, the big book of North Carolina barbecue, and they join us in the studio now. Welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Frank.
It's about time somebody took this on.
Well, go ahead. Well, there have been some other books before, but they were more guidebooks, which ours is not. We're trying to look at the culture and history and...
Well, that is what makes it interesting, and I want to talk about the history, too, because you go back to pretty much man the hunter-gatherer, but, it's very interesting history.
I think the first person we talk about in detail is Homer, so
good place to start. They're barbecuing in the Iliad. There's no question that's what they're doing.
Right. Yeah, and certainly references to it in the Bible, although we'll see no references to hog in the Bible.
No, Leviticus kind of...
That's the end of that.
Kind of banned that, but everything else went on the smoker.
And of course, that's not the least bit surprising. I mean, the idea that you'd be, cooking meat slowly on an open fire, that's about the only way you could do it.
Yeah, particularly with tough cuts. I mean, people figured out very early that if you cook it for a long time at a low temperature, it tenderizes it and makes it...
Tastes good.
Much easier to eat.
Right. And here in North Carolina, how did it become such a big thing here?
We're not prepared to say exactly. I mean, it just stuck on. It used to be the big thing in the whole country. Everybody did barbecues.
They used to have barbecues in New England. At some point, they gave that up and went over to clam bakes, By the 18th century, the barbecue heartland was Virginia and the Carolinas.
And Eastern North Carolina is basically still doing what has always been done. As far as we're concerned, that's the original barbecue.
And describe that for us.
Whole hogs and cooked the way you would barbecue anything. I mean, we could talk about that. But the key thing is the very simple sauce of just vinegar and salt and pepper,
red pepper, cayenne
pepper. And that, as far as we can see, was the original sauce, and Eastern Carolina has stuck with it.
So are some other, I shouldn't say other, cultural backwaters.
No, don't say that.
So have some cultural backwaters elsewhere. If you go to
Blytheville, Arkansas.
Yeah, or Lexington, Tennessee, they're using basically the same sauce you'd find in Goldsboro or Wilson. They just never changed. But late 19th century, you can find it in Kentucky and Texas and Georgia. But 1876, something happened. The Philadelphia Centennial Exposition, Heinz introduced its bottled ketchup.
Uh-huh. And that changed everything. People started adding it. And eventually... it became the base of so many barbecue sauces. It wasn't that they were adding ketchup to the sauce. They were adding things to the ketchup.
Yeah, outside of North Carolina, when you say barbecue sauce, it's this thick, red, sweet stuff that you can buy in the grocery store. There are a lot of commercial brands. And oddly enough, one of the best ones is made in Raleigh. But that's not the indigenous sauce. In the Piedmont of North Carolina, around about the time of the First World War, they started adding ketchup to the basic Eastern sauce, but they didn't add much.
And they didn't change the basic character of the sauce. It's as though Eastern and Piedmont sauces are, say, double first cousins. They share a whole lot of DNA. And the rest of the sauces out in the world are really quite different. They're second cousins once removed or something.
Yeah. People from outside the state don't understand what all the warfare is about, because the differences are... relatively small. Eastern sauce and Piedmont sauce much more like each other than either one's like what you get in Memphis.
But you get up in the mountains or up out west, then you're really talking about that thick, heavy kind of tomato base.
Yes.
West of Statesville, they're emerging really these days as a third barbecue region.
Wait, is that now? Was that Heinz doing, or was that people discovering it on their own, or was Heinz trying to figure out a marketing strategy?
There were some commercial ketchups before, but Heinz was the first big hit, and that was 1876. You mean putting it in the sauce?
We haven't found any evidence that Heinz thought this was a good idea.
People just started doing
it. People just did it.
You don't have to chop your tomatoes and cook them down. It's a pain to work with the tomatoes.
It's sweet, and if you're looking for a little bit of sweet in your sauce, that's an easy way to get it.
Basically, the Heinz do the prep, you know.
The key thing is that the Piedmont sauce doesn't look that different from Eastern sauce. Mm-hmm. It's still thin. It's still basically translucent.
The dominant flavor is still vinegar.
It's still vinegar.
Yeah. And here the theory is that the flavor comes from the way you cook it and you use wood and maybe an open pit. So describe that and even some of the differences in how you cook a pig.
Well, as far as we're concerned, you know, barbecue means cooked for a long time at a low temperature with coals of hardwood. There are places even in North Carolina that are cooking with gas or electricity and calling the processed meat product that they're producing barbecue.
You don't agree, I can tell.
No. We've gotten more and more fundamentalist on this as we've looked into it.
Alan Richmond's the food editor for GQ, and he agrees with it. He said, cooking barbecue, how does he put it? Barbecue without wood is like French food without butter. Inappropriate and insulting, and that's the way we feel about it.
And there's different cuts, too, so the idea that you're only going to cook the shoulder or the Boston butt versus the whole hog.
That's an east-west thing, too, in the Piedmont.
In the Piedmont, they cook shoulders. In the east, they cook whole hog, which was what, of course, everybody did in the beginning. We think we've proven, not quite beyond a shadow of a doubt, but proven that this is the influence of the Germans who settled heavily in the Piedmont. They came down the Great Wagon Road from Pennsylvania and were in the Piedmont in the late 1700s. And
pork shoulder and sort of sweet and sour sauces are central to German cookery in Germany and in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, as is smoked meat.
And all of the guys, you know, this is a fairly recent development around the time of World War One. People started doing things differently in the Piedmont. We know who did it, and they all have German. They're all of German descent.
Blackwelder, which was Schwarzwalder, Schweissgut. Stamey. Anyway, they're all Germans. They all came down the valley. The other thing that ties in completely is that they use what is a German or Dutch or Amish or Moravian, all that, those slaw. They use a marinated slaw that is not the same as a mayonnaise slaw that you'll get in the East. They're using the German slaw.
So that's also leads to the other question. They obviously brought this with them, you'd think. And so, again, you can't have invented slow-cooking meat in the New World. Obviously, they're doing that in Europe. Was it going on in Europe, and did it stop, or is barbecue?
They still have ox roasts in Wiltshire.
We've seen a guy who advertises ox roasts.
Been to them. The word barbecue is a New World word, and there are people around the world who are, in fact, barbecuing and don't call it that.
Mm-hmm. Although it's a Spanish word, right?
Indian.
It started out when the Caribbean Indians, the Spanish, picked it up from them, and the Spanish word was barbacoa. Most people think the English got it from the Spanish. It's a complicated story. We go into it in some detail.
And tell us what it means.
The Indians used it to refer to the sort of framework on which they cooked meat. It was made of sticks because they didn't have, you know, cast iron. Mm-hmm. But this framework of sticks put the meat at some distance above the fire and the coals, the smoke got to it. And so barbacoa meant the apparatus. It also meant platforms of other kinds. They had sleeping platforms they called barbacoas. But it quickly became the word for the apparatus. Southerners don't use it that way anymore, but Australians talk about putting things on the barbecue, and I guess some Northerners do too. But then it became a word for the process, the verb to barbecue, a way of cooking, and then it became a word for the product, you know, the barbecue that you're producing from your barbecue, when you barbecue.
So it really becomes kind of a North American idea in a way.
Yeah, and yeah. we're exporting the word. That they have barbecue competitions now in England, and they think they're doing an American thing, but it's not that different from what they were doing before.
And they use Worcestershire sauce, which, oh, frankly, yeah. is crazy. I'm talking with John Shelton Reed and Dale Volberg Reed, who, along with William McKinney, wrote the book Holy Smoke, the Big Book of North Carolina Barbecue. And I guess in the intro I talked about it being religion. It's also politics. When did the barbecue and pig picking and politics marry?
Oh, it goes back to George Washington's time.
Or before.
Yeah, in colonial Virginia, people running for the House of Burgesses would try to buy people's votes by putting on a barbecue. That's persisted until quite recently.
You're throwing in the word pig picking, though, changes things, because that word is really extremely recent. We can't find it early on at all. 1960s.
Yeah.
It's the first time in print we find it. And even then, most people didn't know what it meant.
It's clear that many people were puzzled by that phrase when it was first used in around Raleigh, but it may have existed down in Tarboro or someplace, but it doesn't make it into print. Anyway, the political connection, one guy said, a reporter from Raleigh, whose name I can't remember, said that no man has ever been elected governor of North Carolina without eating more barbecue than is good for him. that has been true until recently. I think television campaigning may be.
It's always kind of fun to watch the national politicians come here and try to make sense of barbecue. They use their fingers or not. Who they're going to offend.
I had a friend who said he knew Al Gore was going to lose when he came to a barbecue and he put his tie on as he got out of the car.
Big mistake. Well, now, and we talked about the pig pick, and I've always associated it with political events, but the point is any kind of public gathering, it makes sense. You're going to cook a whole hog. It's a lot of meat all at once.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Lots of hogs.
It's a great fundraiser. I mean, we've got some examples. We looked at 1,000 stories easily with the word barbecue in the headline for newspapers. The Greensboro Opera had something called the Barbecue of Seville.
Pigaro.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
You think?
Yeah. The Hemby Bridge Board of Aldermen, had a barbecue in lieu of a tax increase. People use it to raise money for all sorts of good causes.
And then the barbecue restaurant, I guess that's really something that's come to characterize North Carolina, but I guess they can't have been here forever, huh?
No. The first one was 1924 that we know about. First sit-down barbecue restaurant. It was Bob Melton's in Rocky Mount.
I think Robin Copley, our engineer from Rocky Mount, I believe she was the first waitress at that restaurant.
Oh, really?
It seems unlikely.
No, she and Lindsay both turned 29 today, so she couldn't
have
been there then.
She just barely remembers it.
1924 in Rocky Mount.
Yeah.
That was the year Duke was founded. The North Carolina Museum of History has an online timeline, and it mentions Duke and it mentions Bob Melton, so that's all they mentioned for 1924.
They started out really as little stands, things like court days and tobacco auction days. Guys would just go set up a tent or a stand and sell. And they would take the barbecue to the people. And then when people got cars, people could go to the barbecue. Mm. So things got a little more settled and people would open, say, a tent with a wood floor and a counter. And then they would close in the tent and it
start offering curb service. We've got a chapter about the rise of the barbecue restaurants, and It's an interesting story.
But is it because 1924 seems like awfully late. Now, is that because restaurants simply weren't that big? I mean, people may not have gone out to eat much before then.
I guess. We don't find any evidence of sit-down restaurants. I mean, there are plenty of folks who are selling barbecue. You could, after people got automobiles, they could go pick it up and take it home. One story, the second barbecue restaurant, as far as we can tell, which was a couple of years later, was a Scott's restaurant in Goldsboro, and this was Adam Scott, who was a Pentecostal preacher, and he was selling barbecue out his back door, and people started eating it on the porch, his front porch, so he closed in the front porch, and it became a restaurant. And Scott's is still there. They're still in business. Unfortunately, they're not still cooking with wood, but they're still in business.
And, of course, associated with barbecue are all the other things, the sides. You talked about coleslaw and Brunswick stew. And you've got recipes in here. My problem with Brunswick stew is finding a good squirrel.
Well, you just don't know the right people.
I guess not. If you can give me some tips.
We've got a yard full of them. you want to come take care of them?
You either need a BB gun or a fast car, maybe?
We have a substitution in the book. You can use a round steak if you...
You can use a rabbit.
Or a rabbit, yeah. So that's that. And what about the sides? Were they always part of a barbecue? Or when did we associate those?
Slaw quite early. We have a very early recipe for barbecue that suggests serving it with slaw. And it was the same people who came down the Valley of Virginia. And they had the slaw and they had the barbecue, so it's fairly natural that
barbecue
they put
and slaw
together.
And some kind of bread. Some places, many places used to and some still do offer white bread. Rolls, hamburger rolls. Other places used to, and some still do, offer corn pone, big squares of corn pone, basic, simple cornbread. The hush puppy, actually, which...
is in living memory. People know who started serving the hush puppy.
The
it was Warner Stamey in the 1950s, which is really quite late, by my perspective.
The hush puppy only goes back now.
Goes back with barbecue only to the 50s.
Yeah. It was for fish, fried fish. Before that, and we think Stamey must have had this eureka moment in some fish restaurant when he said, this would be good with barbecue.
All the recipes I have, the early ones say fry in fish grease. So they were never associated with anything but fish.
They got associated, and now we know it's greens, it's beans, it's slaw, and all the other things too. And you talk about, I guess one of the things you talk about is the barbecue men and women, the people who are still cooking authentic barbecue. Tell us a little bit about Keith Allen.
Right. Excuse me. First, that's where our co-author Will McKinney comes in. We've got an interview with a dozen or so barbecue folks. All men but one, and Will, who was a student at UNC, got a grant to go around and interview these folks. We knew these interviews existed, so when we agreed to do the book, we tracked him down and said, come do this with us. And his interviews are edited, so we took out a lot of the repetition and the ums and ahs.
And the questions, so they're seamless monologues rather than...
Yeah. Will also gives us some credibility because he's a whole hog cooking man. I've cooked shoulders, but I've never actually cooked a whole hog.
I've helped.
I've seen it done. But Will cooks them himself. In fact, the instructions in here for building your own pit are Will's.
One of the great things about North Carolina, I guess, is the fact that you can still get really good, especially now at farmers markets with folks going back to more sustainably raised hogs. You don't have to get those commercially processed things don't bother cooking them anyway. And there's good stuff around here, good meat.
And the price is coming down. We've got a sidebar about this. The book's got so many digressions and sidebars.
And recipes. Go ahead.
One problem is that the pasture-raised pork has been three or four times as expensive as the industrial product. And for me, at least, part of the charm of barbecue is you take a cheap cut of meat and you turn it into something wonderful. When it costs as much as steak to start with, it's less of a wonder what you've done. But the price is coming down. It's maybe twice as much now.
And the commercially processed stuff is going way up because all those inputs getting expensive for them, too. Husband and wife team writing a book together on barbecue, any big fights along the way?
Never.
You did okay?
Actually, that's literally true. We wrote another book together, and we've edited some things together, and we learned early on that we couldn't write a sentence together. So what we do is we write our bits and we hand them over to each other and we edit each other, which is quite easy. I can cut his prose with no trouble at all.
Part of the deal is we agreed not to fuss about it unless we really, really, really are hurting with it.
Well, it's a wonderful book, and I want to thank you both for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
John Shelton Reed and Dale Volberg Reed, members of the Southern Foodways Alliance and North Carolina Barbecue Society. The new book is called Holy Smoke, The Big Book of North Carolina Barbecue. You can see them tonight at Barnes & Noble and Cary at 7, Saturday at McIntyre's at Farrington Village at 11, and Bull's Head Bookshop in Chapel Hill Tuesday. And if you miss them then, December 5th at Quail Ridge in Raleigh. Are you going to feed all these people?
No. Okay. They're going to feed us.
Okay. Coming up, why art means business in Durham. Stay with us.